at 9:15.
Good afternoon, gardeners. Welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Selena and Karen.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, I don't feel very good today. I think I'm going to go to the garden and...
Nobody likes me, everybody hates me. I think I'll go eat worms. Great big juicy ones, teeny weeny squeeny ones. See how they wiggle and squirm.
Worm juice, worm tea, worms on toast.
Yep, worms in a can.
What about worms in the garden? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, we've done the chickens.
Yes.
I mixed chook and chickens together then.
Chookens.
Right, yep, so we're on to worms now.
They are great helpers in the garden.
They are. Nature's first gardeners, I'm told.
And I can call myself a farmer.
Oh, yes, a worm farmer.
Yes.
Do you actually have a official worm farm? That is something I would like to discuss at some point, but...
Yes.
Do you have one? Oh, right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
What happened was I went to one of those compost collective workshops and they showed us how to make compost and also talked about worm farms. And when you go to one of those workshops, you get a discount coupon to buy either a compost bin or a worm farm or a bokashi bucket.
Yeah.
So I put my name down for, you get $40 off. It's quite a big discount.
Is this still applicable?
Yeah, yeah. So everyone who attends the workshop gets one of these coupons. So I spent mine on a worm farm.
And which one did you go for?
The worm farm.
Oh, sorry. I thought they were all types of worm farms.
No, no.
Okay.
Oh, yes. There's a special worm farm that you can get that has a tap attached.
Yeah.
And has a special... levels where you can put your worms in the bottom and then they go up a level.
All right,
with a special lid.
Specifically designed living quarters for worms.
Yes.
So do all worm farms have taps at the bottom? Because not all compost bins do. Some do, like that. What was the last one you mentioned?
Bokashi.
Bokashi one does, I think. It's got a tap, doesn't it?
No, no. The Bokashi is a bucket.
It drains, though, don't you?
It's a bucket inside a bucket.
Yeah.
But the worm farm has a tap.
Right.
So that the worm juice or the worm tea can come out the bottom.
Ah.
Very handy. Otherwise, you have to make one yourself and it's a bit, you have the bit.
And how long have you been using this for?
Over a year.
Oh, really? And do you get much worm juice out of it?
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know how all the moisture accumulates, but it does.
Yeah.
And it just goes into the bottom layer. And then you just drain it out the bottom in the bucket.
Yeah. How much would you get out of it, like, say, in a week?
I don't empty it every week, so every so often. But you'd get, it depends how big your worm farm is and how many worms you've got.
So how big is this one?
It's, I can't
about
really
like
say.
A foot?
Yeah, it's like, a foot. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd got a whole bucket of... It will fill up the bottom, so you'll get a bucket out of it when it gets full.
Of juice?
Yep.
Wow. And I bet the garden absolutely loves that.
Oh, the plants love it. It's really good fertiliser. Yeah.
Apparently in worm fertiliser, I discovered it's got nutrients ranging from phosphorus, calcium, nitrogen and magnesium in there, all things that, you know, any garden would absolutely love. It's full of goodness.
Yes, so...
Really clever.
The worms are nature's recyclers, so they'll turn anything into nutritious vermicast, they call it, or worm poo. And they can turn 80 to 100 tonnes of soil poo a year.
I'm just trying to visualise that, but okay, it's not happening. Anyway, it sounds like a huge amount. Yes.
And they do it all for you. You don't need to dig, and they'll just turn everything over. They can eat... like about half to up to one times their size of amount of material.
And the worm poo, you called it, what was the official?
Vermicast.
So that's where we get worm castings. I've heard of that being the poop that, there's some worms, I'll get into it with you later, produce surface castings, which is poop that sort of goes to the surface, and there's others that not all worms do that. Apparently the native worms don't do that so much.
Yes. So, Karen, did you know there's three sort of different types of worms, the categories that worms come under?
I know that there's one called Lumbricidae, from the Lumbricidae family. I think I'm saying that correctly. Is that how you say it?
I don't know. I've never said that.
Was that not one of the categories you got? This is a huge class of worm. This breed came over in plants with the settlers.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Well, what I found out was there are three types of worms, not species of worms, but just kinds of worms categorised by how they, whether they're surface or
digging
or vertical.
Oh.
So I'll just give you the names. It might not mean anything to you, but this is what the scientists categorise them as. So there's epigeic worms, which are the worms that go on the surface.
Mm.
And the ones, there are earthworms. And then endogeic worms that go underneath in the roots.
Mm.
And then aneic, which are the ones that go up and down, like the vertical.
Oh,
so
all right.
They're kind of like different.
That's right. And, they were saying it's already gone. The ones that go down deeper, they're the big fat ones.
Yeah, the really long ones.
Not ideal to composting worms. They're better at digging than turning compost over.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to discover that.
So the ones we're interested in are the top two, the epigeic ones, our earthworms, and the endogeic ones, which are our surface ones that turn the compost on the surface.
Okay.
It's two different kinds.
Yeah. So that's cool. Anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, New Zealand's got 200 different species of worms, I found.
Okay, let me see what I got there. Yeah, something like that. Oh, I got 171 native species.
Yes.
And 23 non-native species, and the Lumbricids, which I was talking about, that came with the settlers in the 19th century. Yeah, they're imposters. But good worms, apparently, to have, though. Nothing wrong with them.
The native one, there was one that said it was up to 1.5 metres long.
I got 1.3.
So,
but isn't that crazy? I've seen some pretty big worms, but nothing over a foot.
Yes, I can't
imagine.
And where would they be hiding, those really long ones?
Another big question, how do they actually get around? Can you imagine trying to dig your way through a little hole in the ground with 1 metre behind you with no legs?
I can't imagine how they do it in clay.
They're incredible creatures. A worm is defined as any of a number of creeping or burrowing invertebrate animals with long, slender, soft bodies and no limbs. That is the definition of a worm.
Right, so a snake wouldn't be a type
of worm? I wondered that.
I'm glad we don't have snakes in New Zealand.
So am I. I not a fan of the snake. So anyway, the body of a worm, I'm going to Google that. Listeners, if you find any information out about, what is a snake? A snake's a reptile, though.
Yeah, the snake's a reptile.
A worm's definitely not a reptile.
No, they're invertebrates.
Snakes, of course.
They have bones.
Yeah. It's just, I'm not familiar with snakes.
No, because we don't have them here.
Worms, if I was familiar with snakes and I found one preferably dead, I'd probably have a good look at it. Yeah, and probably chop it and have a look. Is that weird?
Because they don't burrow.
No, they don't. The body of a worm consists of segments divided by rings that circle the worm. And the bump, if you look closely, near the middle of the body is called the clitellum. And that's where they produce that's a cocoon where they produce their eggs.
Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
Now I know. I always wondered what that bump was on them.
Right.
And the front of a worm is the end that is nearest the clitellum. So that's the front of it.
Okay.
they consider that the front.
Right.
Because they don't have eyes.
They don't have eyes.
So I guess they just go by, okay, we'll just go where
how
the eggs are produced.
How do you know if it goes backwards or forwards?
They have a simple brain. I never thought of a worm having a brain, but obviously. And many of their body organs are repeated in the segments. So, for instance, they have paired hearts in segments 2 to 5
mm-hmm.
and paired testicles in 2 adjacent segments.
Okay.
So it's all... I've chopped up a few worms in my time, not to be mean because I love them, and I never think of them having organs and bits. Now I'm a bit grossing myself out there. Anyway, they're hermaphrodites, so they're not self-fertile, so they have to lie with the other worm.
But it could be any other worm, couldn't it? Since they're both male and female.
Yeah, but interestingly, the positions and degree of the clitellum, various pores, and papillae, which is another word, fancy word for bumps, are very important for these worms in identifying that they're actually mating with the right species. So there's 171 species, according to my findings. So that's how they do it. Oh, your clitellum's not in the right... Sorry, mate. Sorry about that. Moving on.
I didn't know we'd get into that kind of education.
But we always do, and it's fascinating, isn't it? And you'll look at you, listeners, you'll look at your humble worm, and you'll look at them and appreciate them so much more, how clever they are. They're clever little things. They're, they've got 4 jobs in the garden. They're mixers, fertilisers, ploughs, and sustenance. Of course, they are food for birds.
Oh, that's
and beetles.
Right. Yeah.
So they've got 4 major roles to play there.
Would you say your soil's not really alive if it doesn't have any worms in it?
Definitely not. And I wanted to touch base on how modern farming practices are affecting our worm population.
Yes.
Did you touch on that?
Well, do tell us, Karen,
because
that's really important.
Well, when land is cultivated, the earthworm numbers decline because through physical harm and change in the types and amount of plant material they feed on, because they feed on plant material. That's,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Would you call that vegans? Vegetarians? Anyway.
Herbivores, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a study done in the 1950s on the Lumbricid worm, the imported one,
mm-hmm.
at the Ruakura Animal Research Station, I actually worked there once, by the way, in Hamilton. It was done on pasture growth, and the pasture growth was measured on several soil types with and without Lumbricid earthworms.
Mm-hmm.
And the study showed that increases of 30 to 110% in grass growth in response to earthworm activity. It's quite a vast percentage there, but even 30% increase is enough for me to say that's a good increase in productivity worms.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was interesting. And then studies in Canterbury show that worm numbers dropped from about 900 per square metre under pasture to less than 200 per square metre under long-term arable cropping.
Is this because of the artificial fertilisers?
I think that would be definitely burning them a bit.
And maybe the ploughing and the cultivation.
Damaged.
And turning over the soil and, yeah.
They also noticed that Canterbury study, that was a decline in species diversity with up to 5 species under pasture but only 2 under arable cropping, which was interesting. Another interesting fact, since we're on the topic of farming, get this. I've never been so excited about worms, but that's why I love doing this sort of job, because it's like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You get to find out all these cool things. I'm such a geek. Worms are the largest and most abundant of multicellular animals in the soil. Research and studies have shown that the mean weight of earthworms in some of New Zealand's best agricultural soils ranges from about 640 to 3,000 kilograms per hectare. Now, you were talking about worm farming. You've got a few going on in your thing there, okay? Compare this with 15 sheep per hectare, which is apparently what you'd have, and that's 800 kilograms thereabout. So meat-wise.
Yeah. Very productive.
That's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
In the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite amazing.
Isn't that interesting when you think of it like that?
Yeah.
Yummy. No wonder the birds are so happy when the soil's healthy.
Yeah.
Yummy, yum, yum. So, and their meat, they'd probably be quite delicious because they're eating all that good, well, you'd hope it's good, plant material and whatnot. Mm. Mm.
So happy worms and happy birds.
Yeah, and happy soil.
And then happy plants.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely would recommend, if you don't have a worm farm, to consider building one or making one, or just, and you can make them out of anything. You can just get some buckets and stack them inside each other.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that.
Or you can have like a bathtub.
And they'll drill little holes up on the inside bucket. Is that what they do? And then they pop it, So you, from your experience, how long have you had your worm farm for?
Well, over a year, so.
So would you
I'd recommend the ones you get from the Compost Collective. I put mine on a little stool so that the worm juice can drain out into a bucket. So just have it up high a bit so the tap can drain.
Yeah.
And then put it in a sheltered spot, not a sunny spot, somewhere a bit out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Not too hot and not too cold, but in Auckland it's fine because we don't get frost.
Food-wise, what do they eat?
So food-wise, all your kitchen scraps,
mm-hmm.
So all your veggie peelings and everything.
What about some people say that worms do eat meat? Is that a rumour?
They can, but they don't really like it.
Oh, okay.
So there are some foods that worms don't like to eat that they say not to feed them because they just won't eat it.
Okay.
So, don't feed them spicy food. They don't really like to digest that.
Oh, okay. What about if you've got like chili sort of cut-offs in your... Is that considered a no-go?
So spicy food such as chili, onion and garlic, they don't like.
Oh.
So then they don't like meat and milk products, so no yogurt or anything.
Yeah.
And citrus or acidic foods, they don't go for that. The other thing they don't really eat that much of is bread and pasta.
Mm.
And then your oils and your liquids such as soup. But you can feed them not the soup, but the veggies that are left out of your soup.
Mm.
Yeah.
What about coffee?
Coffee grounds. Yeah, they do like that.
Probably gives them a good bit of fibre.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can feed them cardboard, like your egg cartons and your toilet rolls.
Oh, okay.
And they'll eat vacuum cleaner waste.
What about handy towels?
Yes, handy towels, tissues. Just wet them a bit first and they'll chomp that up.
Wow.
What I do with my worms is I shred up paper. So it can be newspaper, but I also have a shredder where I shred up just waste paper.
I didn't realise that the worms were actually eating that paper.
Yeah, they can eat it.
Yeah.
They will eat most
of it might have clogged them up.
No.
I wonder if there's ever been a constipated worm.
Well, paper and cardboard is just, you know, trees.
Yeah.
That mashed up pulp. So they'll turn it back into goodness.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Selena.
Oh, that's all right.
Earthworms, they act like tiny ploughs, creating little tunnels. And this subsequently allows air and water to get to the seeds and roots of plants. Isn't it amazing how God thought of creating little workers like that? Their burrowing improves soil drainage, conditions for roots, aeration and soil structure. Scientist Charles Darwin, remember that guy?
Oh, yes.
He once had this to say about the role of the lowly earthworm, and this is a quote. "The plough was one of the most ancient and most valuable of man's inventions. But long before he existed, the land was in fact regularly ploughed and still continues to be thus ploughed by earthworms. It may be doubted whether there are many other animals which have played so important a part in the history of the world as have these lowly organised creatures." End of quotation.
Thanks, Charles Darwin.
So even he back then was on to the importance of them. Yeah.
So those plough inventors, you know, you put your the worms out of a job and the worms are revolting.
Yeah.
They're going, we want our jobs back.
Yeah, they've got their little banners and little placards. Right, take it back. They we've got to look out for them.
Yeah, and speaking of the worms, their homes that we can make for them, if we're going to get them to work for us. Have you seen those Hungry Bins, Karen?
No.
Oh, they're quite flash. You can see them
like
in the
flash things.
Garden Centre or Mitre 10 or, you know, and they're like the hotel of worm farms.
So how? What are they called again?
The Hungry Bins.
Is this different from what you have at your place?
Yes, it's one of those flash
We've worm got farms. The remains of one of those down at the community garden.
Do we?
Yes. We were wondering what it was.
Oh.
Monique was talking about it and she said, and it's just pretty much the same as, you're just your basic worm farm.
Oh.
sorry, Mitre 10.
But they cost hundreds of dollars. Apparently they last for ages.
Oh.
And you don't have to bend or lift anything. And all sort of the worms live in the sort of like a receptacle that tapers down so that all the...
I can see that in the picture.
All the castings go to the bottom and then it drains out the bottom. And it's on wheels so you can move it around.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks quite flash.
Yes, it does.
And you can, just put all your household waste and scraps in there and they'll eat it. And, it looks very respectable.
Quick question.
Yes?
You know how you've got all your worms in the worm farm or plastic container, pretty much. So I didn't actually find out any information on the life cycle. How long does a worm live for? Because what happens when they die? Do they just kind of and all their friends are around and, you know what I mean?
I'm not sure about that, Karen.
It's almost like you've created a mini ecosystem there, eh?
They keep multiplying and then you just... If the population gets too big, you just divide them up and chuck them in your garden and then they just keep going.
So when you take the lid off and have a look in there, is it just like teeming with worms?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
And you make all this worm vermicast and you can just get out handfuls. It doesn't smell or anything.
Yeah.
And just chuck it on your plants. And the plants will soak up the goodness, and some of the worms might go with it, but they'll...
Do you sometimes just rather than just get the juice, you get your hands into the stuff and just, oh, how much fun. I think I've been seriously thinking about getting a worm farm because, it's been on my mind.
If you do, I'll give you some worms.
That'd be awesome. Thank you. Speaking of which, any of the listeners that might want to, boost up their worm population and maybe even put some into... Can you buy... you can buy... Yeah.
So you can buy them in boxes and they're called tiger worms because they're the special compost worms.
Oh, yes. I've heard of them, yeah.
Or the red wrigglers, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you can buy them, I think, 1,000 in one box and they're about maybe $40, $50,
wow,
which is a bit pricey, but they're worth it. So, yeah.
I just think, how weird. But, hey, well worth it, I reckon. Yeah.
Okay. What about our plant of the week, Karen?
Oh, yes, let's do that.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion.
Well, our herb of the week this week, or plant of the week, is rosemary.
Yes, the lovely rosemary, which we have growing outside the Planet FM studios.
Oh, lovely. That's so everyone can be onto it with sharp brains and memories.
Yes, it's flowering right now, so it's got beautiful blue, purpley flowers.
It is, yes.
And the bees love it.
Yeah.
It is a shrub.
Yeah.
It's evergreen, and the leaves are scented with a beautiful piney fragrance.
Mm-hmm.
and very good to put in your roast lambs.
Yeah, or great with roast potatoes too.
You don't need a lot of it, just a few sprigs. But you can also chuck the leaves into your barbecue and give a fragrance or your fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll give the beautiful aroma to your fire.
Talking of aromas, have you heard of people putting rosemary sprigs in their smelly shoes before?
No. Oh.
Yeah, that's supposed to be,
very good for that.
I have tried it. I found the rosemary oil to be far more efficient, but it depends, I guess.
Yeah,
how bad the situation
bad
is. But because it is quite a strong smell, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Very fresh, though.
All right. So the rosemary, its Latin name is Rosemarianus officinalis.
Mm-hmm.
Because officinalis is meaning herbal medicine.
Oh, is that right?
If anything's got officinalis.
I have seen that a few times. I thought it meant official.
Oh, it just means it's medicinal or you can use it.
Or officially medicinal.
Yeah. Okay, so it also means dew of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Because it likes to grow on the coast.
Yes.
It's originally from the Mediterranean.
Yes.
And because if you notice that the leaves, they're quite tough and underneath they're white, but they're quite resistant to salt spray.
Oh, right.
So they're quite tough plants.
Yeah.
And they like, the dry coastal areas and sort of limey, stony soil.
Yeah. The kind of plant, if you're not like a... really, I didn't want to use the word keen gardener, but if you sometimes have moments where you just forget your garden altogether because you get tied up in life, rosemary is the ideal herb for you. Because you can literally just leave it in a pot and forget about it for months and you come back and then it's flowering. Still likes a little bit of water though, but obviously any plant requires, even cactuses need water at some point.
So they love dry, so they don't like wet feet. They make a really good hedge.
Yes, they do.
You can clip them or keep them trim. Or you're going to use the leaves anyway, but they like a trim.
Yeah.
And they're a really good companion plant for cabbages, beans, carrots and, your roses. If you grow the prostrate one under the roses, they make a good carpet.
Oh.
So
you're talking about the
prostrate. Rosemary.
Or
creeping rosemary.
Ah.
Yes, you got your upright and then your sort of creeping. Which,
I've seen people plant that creeping one, sort of having it draping over their, walls and things like that. It looks quite pretty.
And you can grow it under your clothesline and it fragrances your washing.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So, that's rosemary.
Ah, apparently back in the day, the Romans used to wear it around their heads. And times of when they were doing their, the big Roman Olympics they used to have, and they'd use it to help them with their memory and function and what was the other thing? Just general alertness, I think. So anyone out there doing exams, go and get some sprigs of rosemary and put them on your head.
Exactly.
You'll ace it. Thanks for that, Selena.
All right. So happy gardening, everyone. Get your worms in and plant some rosemary.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Selena. Bye, guys.
Bye. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.